Thank you, guys, and thanks again to everyone else that's read, that's helped us open the meeting, and take this chance to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. And I'd actually like to extend a warm welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a massive welcome to anyone that's new to Narcotics Anonymous. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So thank you. So guys, we are a speaker meeting, and it falls on me to introduce our speaker today. And at very short notice, this lady has agreed to come and share her experience, strength and hope with us. I'm going to answer the question she just put me here. It's an absolute pleasure. He celebrated a major milestone in her recovery in the last few days. Has been a really valuable and productive member of our group's area. Wandered in a couple of three years ago, maybe 4 years ago, really in need of meetings, and it's been an absolute privilege actually to get to know her a little bit. We've had a few conversations from time to time, and I know we identify for a lot of things. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Penelope, who's come along to share her experience, strength and hope with us tonight for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever she's comfortable with. So Penelope, the floor is yours. Please jump in and share with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for that really nice introduction. A lovely introduction, actually. And I do feel privileged to have something to share today. You know, my using was long. Did I say I'm Penelope and I'm an addict?
Hi Penelope.
Hi Penelope.
I nearly forgot to say that bit. I'm kind of, hi everyone, I'm very grateful that I have always put my recovery first. I was taught to do that when I first came to NA after a long using, which was painful in the end. It was just the worst rock bottom. You know, for me, it was enough. I'd done jails, institutions, and got sent back from death. I mean, you know, the kind of stuff when we OD and want to die, and you know, the places that I ended up in. You know, using drugs was fun in the beginning. It was still fun. I'd still be doing it, you know. I subscribed in my teens to the kind of trendy, arty kind of approach to living. It wasn't, you know, but people were called straight, you know. I think they call them suits these days or something. But, you know, that I didn't know why. I didn't like that kind of strict way of living, you know. And my whole approach to life was hedonistic in the end. And I didn't realise it at the time. It wasn't something I did deliberately, but I lent in that direction. And, you know, anyway, when I got to NA, I felt like it was what I was looking for, you know, because during my rock bottom, I followed the trail with drugs right the way through, lots of different drugs, you know, from living in the West End, you know, 60s using, which was predated by, you know, lots of alcohol, because that was the drug that was used in, you know, like going to the races and, you know, back in a winner, going down the champagne tent, lots of scotch, lots of, you know, lots of spirits, and I wasn't aware that it was, you know, not a good idea when you're young and your brain is developing to be drinking alcohol. You know, I started quite young, teens, and you know, I stopped. I white knuckled to stop because I was given an opportunity to have a career and learn to drive, and a lot of those things that, you know, I was kind of a bit older and I'd travelled a bit, and I'd had a lot of trauma went on with me, which I used in my career, because it was a kind of stock in trade, and you know, emotions were something I tried to manipulate with my using. You know, the 60s were like, oh, everybody, I lived in the West End and everybody in the West End, we were all using the same drugs. And I was around a lot of, you know, rock stars and music business and the entertainment industry. And, you know, it was the way the culture was, and the music, sex and drugs and rock and roll. Until it got, you know, so the drugs started causing, you know, lots of trouble for me anyway. You know, the violence started, the fighting started, the throwing things started, you know, the actual tapping into the deeper levels of my trauma that had been there, you know, that I didn't know why or how to deal with. Anyway, it carried on. I mean, I went from one drug to another. When I had the drugs that I would was taking at the time stopped working, I would go on to the next drug, and it was like on and on and on. Until I finally ended up in a caravan, in, you know, on a geographical, trying to get away from the addicts I'd been using around, who had got, you know, the using had got quite dark by then. And, you know, and I don't know how it happened. I mean, it was part of an institution that I was going to, and someone from that institution took me to my first meeting, sort of took pity on me, because I was trying to white knuckle some of the prescriptive medicine that I had been, you know, put on, and wanted to get off that because it was just as bad. You know, I always thought if I can solve the problem with this kind of drug, I won't have a problem with something else. And the counsellor said to me, you know, if you pick whatever you pick up in its place, you'll become addicted to. And you know, and then I started drinking really heavily, and on top of my script, and you know, it was just a mess in the end. And you know, when I found NA, they suggested I get a sponsor, and I didn't know what that meant. That I found the people really warm and loving and nice, and I kind of picked up on the energy that they were addicts and that they had a problem and they were clean. And I found that a little bit overwhelming. And then, you know, through, you know, there's like, in those days, where I lived, you'd get picked up by someone who had a car, and everybody got picked up along the way, and we had what they call in America, asphalt recovery, which is like, you know, you do it in the car, you have the meeting in the car, then you have the meeting at the meeting, then maybe there's a service meeting, and then you go for coffee, and then you have another one, another meeting back in the, you know, on the way back in the car. And for a long time, my recovery was like that. I got to 60 days, and my, you know, the person that had come to pick me up had driven about 50 miles to come and pick me up, to take me to London to the Brixton meeting. That was quite a huge meeting in those days, and still is, actually. And, you know, there was a lot of recovery there, and they did a kind of a celebration of key rings and stuff at the end. So, I was going to be picked up for my 60 days. And I was hanging around waiting for him to turn up. This guy was, you know, like, and I sat on the wall and I just want a drink. I wish they'd all leave me alone, you know. I just want to have a drink. And because it was the way I was feeling. I wanted to fix, you know, my nerves and wondering if what this was about. But I'm so glad, you know, I waited and I, you know, I said to the guy, look, I just want to go and have a drink. You know, can you, like, and he said, like, I've driven 50 miles to pick you up and I'm going to drive you another 70 miles there and another 70 miles back. And then I've got, and you know, all you've got to be willing to do is get in the car. So the thing was, I was a people pleaser, so got in the car. I mean, I really have used that as a metaphor for my recovery. You know, it's like, you know, this, the meetings and the fellowship and recovery is the lifeboat in a sea of, what does it say in the basic text? Someone, you know, is in a sea of hopelessness, degradation, and, you know, I don't know what, but, you know, I knew what that meant. You know, isolation and death for me if I was still in the water, you know, and somebody hauled me in the lifeboat. And when I got a sponsor, she told me to pick up an oar and row and do service. And that's what I did. You know, many years have gone by, and I have always done service. I've always tried to help newcomers because I remember being that newcomer and all the people that went out of their way to help me. So, you know, a bit later on, I got a car and I used to go and pick people up round in Essex, you know, 12-step calls and take people to meetings and, you know, take them to, you know, Southend to get their blood test and, you know, take them back for the meeting and then take them home and get, you know, I used to do what they said to me, are you willing to go to any lengths? And I knew what that meant, you know, any lengths meant, you know, putting myself out, go that extra mile for another person, like had been given to me. And that was what I have always given back. Obviously, the years go by, and different layers of the illness of the disease of addiction. It wasn't about the drugs anymore. It was about, you know, my disease of addiction, which I've come to realize, which they told me at the time is progressive, incurable, and fatal. And it, you know, I didn't know that it still progressed once you got clean. It does arrest, recovery arrests this, so it stops it being active in your life for today. And that's, you know, all I have to do is turn up every day and say, yeah, I surrender. Because when I wake up in the morning, it's going chat, chat, chat in my ear, you know, glad your eyes are open. Listen, you can't do this. What do you think you're doing? You're too old and you're too, you know, decrepit. You can't keep up with all these youngsters. What do you got to say about any, you know, it just chats about all that stuff in my head. And if I've got an issue going on, it piles that in as well, you know, so that I'm so confused, I don't know what I'm doing. But the one thing I do remember, when I had these spiritual awakenings, which were about this thing that, you know, my obsession to use drugs had been removed after I was, like, I don't know, round about 60 days, round about between 60, 90 days, I actually felt that, you know, what's happened. I looked back at what had happened and saw that, you know, I'd never been able to stop using or craving something, you know, for more than about 60 minutes, you know. I mean, sometimes it was less, you know. And all of a sudden, I'm like 60, 70, 80 days, you know, what happened? And then I realized something, a power greater than me, had removed my obsession to use drugs. Now, that same set of understanding, you know, that there is a power in these rooms that can remove my obsession. So when it goes into other things, which I'm an addict, you know, I get obsessed with anything. I've just got obsessed with a Netflix. Sorry, I shouldn't mention that. I've just got obsessed with a program. You know, I get obsessed with books, you know. I get obsessed with crystals. I get obsessed with plays or, you know, actors or, you know, these are the things that I'm obsessive about, you know. I mean, I have been obsessive in relationships. I had to work a set of steps around that, you know, where it got me into a lot of trouble, where I didn't know what was the matter with me, you know. And I understand that the steps are there, not just for once and for all, but, you know, to use in my life. To help me to live comfortably every day with this illness. You know, if I surrender and, you know, sometimes it takes a lot, you know, but I will surrender because I know that that's the only answer. If I'm powerless and the disease is making my life really unmanageable, then I have to surrender, because the power that took away the obsession in the first place is still there. You know, some people call it, you know, the literature. Some people call it, you know, the trees. Some people call it the planet, the universe. Some people call it crystals that are in the earth that are special, a part of God. But, you know, mainly in the literature, it's called God. And for me, you know, I don't wish to be controversial, but I had looked, because what happened at the end of my using was I fell in this spiritual black pit of despair and hopelessness and death. And I could not get out of it. I couldn't stop using. And, you know, what happened was I started to think I need some help to get out. Now, human beings were trying to help me get out. All sorts of different human beings tried to help me. And none of it worked, but I started to realize it was a spiritual thing, that I needed spiritual help. And I looked in religion, I looked in at least 5 or 6 different religions, and none of it worked. It was all very confusing to me. You know, some of it was dogmatic, and so I resisted it when I heard people in meetings being dogmatic, and you must do this, you know. You know, and I was very lucky that my sponsor was very gentle. And she was very kind and encouraged me. And she knew when I was willing that she could kick me up the, you know, she could give me a good slap and tell me, listen, you need to do so and so, you know. And I trusted her. By this time, I'd formed a relationship with her, you know. I found it really difficult in the beginning because I didn't, you know, in those days we didn't have mobiles, and, you know, I didn't have a phone because, you know, we had these numbers on the phone that you could dial, and my kids had dialed every single one that I had. And that. So the phone in the caravan got disconnected, and I didn't have a car by then. We lost the car. There were all sorts of, you know, problems with money. I all went on drugs every time I had money going in from benefits and things. And so, you know, my early recovery was very difficult, but it was very dependent on help from people in the fellowship as well, which was part of my higher power. And yeah, I don't know how long I've been going on for, Steve. you know, my step four was like, I was really bright and shiny a year, and my sponsor told me, yeah, you know, because I had a pencil, I had long hair, and I had a pencil in the bun of my hair. And she said, oh, there, this is time to start writing. Do your step four. So I thought, what is this step four? What is it? Everybody would, you know, and I used to go to London meetings on the train and get a travel card and go to a couple of meetings and follow people around that looked like they knew what they were doing, you know, have a big folder tucked under their arm because they were writing their step four. You know, people didn't write their step four on computers. I actually don't think it's a good idea. I think it's always a good idea when it comes from your heart down your arm and onto the page. You know, that's how I learned to write. And I got in a real muddle. I never bought a book to write it in. So I had loads of bits of paper. And someone in the fellowship took me down to the sea and I sat on the beach with it for hours with it, bits of paper trying to sort it all out. And spent the whole afternoon, you know, and it was huge. It was a bag, great big bag full, you know. I often say to people, you know, you carry in this heavy load. You know, you were trying to run down the road and it was a real, you know, they were real kind of cases, you know, and they were heavy, you'd stop, you know, you can't jog, you know, you can't go running with that stuff. To sit them down and unpack them, you know, find out what's in there. And my step four was really long. I didn't know even how to start, but I used to write a prayer at the top of each page and ask God to help me be honest and thorough, because they were the words, but I didn't know what it meant particularly. You know, I couldn't remember a lot of my using. I was in blackout. And, yeah, especially the last bit. And, you know, I just wrote what came up. And if I found myself in London one day and I was like, oh, you know, I was in a car with a load of people who were going to an NA dance. And I was like, I remember I used to live there, you know, and I did this there. And, this, and all these memories started flooding my mind. And then, you know, by the time I finished, I came to my sponsor's house and I did it in two lots. But we said the Serenity Prayer and we did a prayer on our knees as well and shared the step five, which was huge. And I felt the presence of my higher power, that there was something there, not just she and I, that was special as well. And when I left there, you know, after we finished the second lot of reading it, I felt like I elevated in my trainers, which I felt like I was walking, in, you know, on a cushion of air or something, you know. And I went and did a chair, and I was so grateful that I had drawn a line under that. That was my past, but I didn't realize step six and seven were looming. You know, step six, where I hit the ground running with that, you know, defects coming up, you know, and all the time I'm trying to sort out the wreckage from my using, you know, the debt, you know, getting out of a relationship. They used to say, don't get in a relationship in your first year. I was trying to get out of one, you know, especially because he didn't want me to be clean. He wasn't ready. You know, I must admit that, you know, it was a bit of a crazy relationship. It was, you know, using and I don't know. I've gone into that in other shares, but I'm not going to go into it now. But you know, my main thing was I wanted to make amends to my children, and you know that kept me clean for a while. You know, and then after a while, I realized that I had to do it for myself. It wasn't just about them. I had, you know, it went on for years. You know, people were 3 years clean, and they were sharing about how wonderful their life was, and these amazing jobs or relationships, or they bought their house, or they had a car, and I didn't have any of that. I had two really crazy children, and I mean, you know, I'd spend the day trying to shop, get the money together to go shopping. And buy this food and then cook it and then put it on the table. And one would look at the other one, and the table would be tipping up, the food would be hanging on the walls, skateboards sticking out the side of walls. I mean, the anger that my children, because they suddenly were able to say, you know, and I was awake enough to hear it. At one point, my daughter screamed at me for about 3 days. I remember she sat on the stairs. She wouldn't let me anywhere near her. And I have to say, you know, I stayed clean through that, all of those difficulties, not having any money, trying to pay debts, and I just, you know, for me, it was. You know, it was something, you know, it's not like that today. You know, I over the years I have made when I got to those steps, I made direct amends to both of them. Obviously they swore at me and you know, but after I'd been going to meetings for you know a while, it was like in the beginning I'd ask them how they were, and they'd say, "Oh, you're always at a meeting." And then, after about a year or two, it's like they recognise the behaviour, and it's like, "Mum, I think you need a meeting." They started to understand that this wasn't just another crackpot scheme of mine, that you know, I was going to get clean, and you know, it was going to be different this time. And anyway, so yeah, I learned how to do step 10. I had a sponsor relapsed when I, you know, she was about 10 years clean, and I was absolutely devastated, and got another sponsor after a while, because I felt like I was like a boat without a rudder, you know. Drifting along, and feeling really lost, on the currents of my defects and my emotions. And then, you know, I learned to meditate. I was going to yoga again by then, and some of the girls that were going were saying they were going to go and learn to meditate in this place, and I wanted to go, and then they didn't have room for me, so I ended up having a one-to-one learning. So yeah, that's sort of like my journey through the steps in recovery. I don't know if I've been going on for hours, Steve, have I?
You good?
Do I need to shut up now?
No, you carry on.
Absolutely not.
What?
No, keep going. You're doing
Right.
fine. You have loads of time left.
Okay, thank you. Well, yeah, so
Absolutely not.
one of the things that I didn't have was a job, you know, and I don't know how to, I don't know how it happened, but it's like people in the fellowship pointed me in the direction of maybe retraining to do this particular job, which would access, you know, some of my skills that from when I was working before the drugs kind of ruined my life. With the help of lots of different people in the fellowship and in lots of different ways, I found my way to university. And I thought, this is funny. The only thing I ever took at school was days off. You know, I was a gypsy when I was young because of, you know, various things. When we moved, I think I went to 13 schools altogether, including the one on TV. And the thing was that I had never been able to concentrate because of the trauma, which I didn't realize until obviously I did a bit of work on myself. And especially when I took this degree, you know, this postgraduate degree, and my education, I can't believe it these days. I just think, how did that happen? But I loved it. I felt like the weather today in England has been like bright, fluffy clouds in a blue sky on and off all day. And it was a bright blue sky. And I was at the top of this university building in the studio there that was part of the module that I was working on. And I looked out the window and I stepped out for a moment. You know, those moments when you just go, how did I get here? I'm failed suicide from a caravan, you know. This is unbelievable. This is wonderful. I was like studying the things that I most absorbed my interest and engaged me and my opportunities, you know, my union paid for the books and, you know, it's part of the course. And it was unbelievable the way that it all happened. It was unbelievable to me from where I'd come from. But, you know, I'd started to learn that you can do anything you want in recovery if you put your mind to it. And it was a revelation, a lot of spiritual wakenings, you know. I mean, I know they talk about the founder of the other fellowship having a spiritual experience where he was at the top of a mountain and felt the light running through him and the wind of spirit. But, you know, for me, I've had a spiritual awakening on each of the steps and through all the way through my recovery. The last 3 years have been, I'll just finish that little story. I qualified where there were 30 of us, really brilliant minds that all started, but it was a warrior woman course. And I have to say, it took me a lot of of really intense effort to go. I mean, the most I'd ever been away from a meeting was 8 days, and that was on that course. And you know, there were a lot of challenges on there to my mind and my body and my spirit. My body, because I was older, and a lot of the girls that were and men that were on this course were much younger than me, and that seems to have been the theme of my recovery, that there are a lot of younger people these days in recovery. And you know, sometimes it can make me feel less than, because I'm not young anymore. I'm an older woman who's like, you know, been there, done there, that, and most things I've bought the t-shirt and had to got the tape for, you know. But this last 3 years has been a real challenge. I haven't I've just dropped something. My earring. there's been a real challenge in my life, you know, to be ill, to have my physical vitality that I got back when I got clean. But, you know, I have had a major operation, a major illness that nearly killed me. Lots of little things like vertigo and, you know, migraine and stuff that's happened with me. And then arthritis of my shoulder. So I've had a lot of health issues, which have been quite debilitating. And, you know, I have worked very hard on, you know, the acceptance of the fact that I am powerless over some of the consequences of my using. And, you know, I'm grateful that I'm still on this planet. I have to say, you know, being clean and being given another chance at life, I'm still grateful for every minute. Even though there are days when I think, I haven't done this and I haven't done that, and what should I do, you know? And just simple things like washing up. And then the other day I found a whole book full of my 10-step inventories, you know. I found all the writings and I designed my dad's funeral as well, because he died on my 5th NA birthday, and I found all the kind of script for that, and how wonderful that was. I was thinking, how did I do that? You know, I was only 5 years clean. Why? I felt like I channeled my dad, and he had what he wanted, and the flowers and everything. It was a beautiful funeral, and the gathering of the family afterwards. We didn't have a wake where everybody got drunk. We had a very spiritual kind of circle in his home, and because I knew that it would be the last time everybody would meet there. And anyway, there was all this collection of 10-step inventories that I've done over the course of that time. I just sort of realized that, you know, that I have the same patterns, you know. I still don't like washing up. And my son said he was going to buy me a dishwasher the other day, you know. I've had one sitting in my kitchen for a few years, which doesn't fit anywhere, you know. It's never been plumbed in. So, you know, I mean, these are practical things that I'm not good at, you know. I used to rely on the men in my life for, you know, and the only man in my life these days is my son, really. Although I got a marriage proposal last week. He's been saying it for a while, and, you know, and he is really ultra serious about it, you know. I'm old and he's even older, and I don't know where that's going to end up. You know, I've tried marriage a couple of times and it's never worked for me. I don't know why, but I think probably, you know, I would have been better in a monastery or a convent or something. If I'd have thought about it earlier in my life. I'm a loner, but I do enjoy people, and I had one of those tests a few years ago, and it diagnosed me as half introvert and half extrovert, 50% each. And you know, it's the way I've been. Yeah, I've been very gregarious in the fellowship, and going everywhere and traveling, going to, you know, American World Convention in Spain, World Convention in America. Been to Australia in my life, and, you know, in recovery, I've been to a lot of Europe, Germany and Switzerland and Spain and France. And, you know, at the end of my using, I could not leave the street, because I had this ball and chain around my ankle that I couldn't leave the drugs, you know. anyway, I do feel like I've been going on a lot. And I thank you for the opportunity to share more than 4 minutes. And thank you for listening to me. And thank you very much for asking me to share today, Steve.